is the electric element, i.e. a crystal. And the Hartley had an inductor, i.e. something that's measured in Henry's. Very nice. Very good. That's a good memory key. I think I'll put that in my brain. At 57 soon enough, that'll be a useful memory cue.
Yeah, there are some other questions where, if you're trying to remember it, the answer only appears once in the entire exam, and if it's the correct answer, you can do a memory maid, a memory aid for yourself. One that comes to mind is, well, the one I created anyway, always take the Chevy, and I don't remember the name of the circuits, but it starts with C-H-E-V-Y, and it only appears once. It's the correct answer. It doesn't appear anywhere else on the test.
Chebyshev filter?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, I actually know what that is. Okay, very good. Very, very good. That's very good. Thank you, Bruce. Anything else?
Yeah, for everyone, you know, they'll each have their own things that works for them, but you can do all sorts of little memory aids, and if you do something like that, it tends to stick.
I like the two you gave us tonight. That's pretty neat. Three kinds of oscillators and the and how to remember the filter that's on the exam. But that'll change, but the others are correct. That's pretty neat. All right, anybody else have any thoughts for Chris on, and anyone else who might be studying for an exam, what to do? All right, Chris, did you want to make any further comments or pleas?
The only comment that I'm going to make is that I appreciate the time and effort that the VEs take time out of their lifestyle to help us advance.
Roger, roger. Okay. We will move on. That's awesome. Alrighty, let's see. Our next one is Bob K from N2ZZK. Your question, sir, K2BAR.
Good evening, everybody on the net. This is Bob from Bergenfield, N2ZZK. My question is, there's a repeater on Mount Washington in Vermont, 146.655. And it's an open repeater. I was wondering if anybody actually communicated directly with this repeater during adverse conditions during the winter time, and what were some of the conditions that were at that top of that mountain at those adverse conditions. I've been to the top of the Mount Washington twice many years ago, but not in the winter time, and it's quite an interesting station up there. But my question was, if anyone communicated with it directly during those, let's say, during the winter season, what were some of the reports, if they do give that out, the conditions and temperature, and let's say wind velocity?
Well, it's one of the highest windy places east of the Mississippi. On a fairly consistent basis. I've never communicated through 655 in the winter. Interestingly enough, it's so high that it sometimes is above some of the tropospheric stuff that's around at lower mountains up in that general direction works. So, for instance, Mount Ascutney, Mount Greylock, Pac-Monadnock. I've worked all those over the years, as well as some in the Adirondacks. Whiteface comes to mind, and you know the problem is that there's some you know, Washington sometimes is above the thermal inversion layer at times. The friggin' thing's a mile high, you know.
Comment.
Go right ahead, Ray.
I
went up there with my parents in 1980 on the cog railway. I think it was $20 then. And I worked simplex with my old Gaisu FT207R, which was that first simplex down to, I mean, that first synthesized HT with the red LED, and worked somebody's simplex. We were up in the fog. It was summertime, where it was 80 at ground level. It was 50s up there. They were just building that new observatory. And I think along with the FM station, I think it's on 94.9, it was Channel 8, which has been moved since the fire down into Maine. But I could work somebody in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, simplex, Mobile. And I remember from Whiteface up there working direct over to the repeater, but I've never done it through it in winter or an opening up to there from here. But that was the frequency. I forget the PL, the 05655. Been up to Greylock, been up Whiteface. Yeah, Pac-Man Adnock used to be with Wayne Green at a repeater on 14679 back when I was up there at Portsmouth in the Air Force, like 70 or so. And then they said, well, we can't with the forestry or whatever have a repeater there anymore. And that's when I had a Drake ML2 with crystals, my first 2-meter rig back in 72. But that's as much as I remember. But on Channel 8 that I could see in Portsmouth, off the air, it was pretty rough up there on Mount Washington. You had to use a cat to get up there. The weather guy, I think, was there for the winter. And of course, conditions, even now, when there was an opening recently to New Hampshire on the weather frequencies, it was pretty cool up there already earlier in the fall compared to ground level. I just thought I'd make those comments of my experiences with that area, as it is about, what, over 6,000 feet. And you had a good point, maybe it's above the tropo when the band opens, because I've worked up to K1WHS on 62 meters in southern Maine when the contests are on sideband.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, well, it's hard to complain, I mean, to compare Dave Olean's station to anybody who drives up to some of these higher spots, unless they're bringing an arsenal with them, like the guys do at Greylock. And I'll tell you why. The Dave Olean station, I mean, among other things, has some really amazing antennas. So, for instance, there are a set of 2-meter Yagis that are fixed. I think there's 16 of them, and they're short. I want to say there's three or four elements, I think four element Yagis. But they're set up so as to have a very broad, clean pattern. So they can talk all the way north of Toronto, and certainly to Detroit, but they can talk into Minnesota, and also down the coast without turning an antenna. In addition, they have a steerable Yagi array that's really, really pointy. But the reason why WHS hears so much is because they have search antennas, and then they have, you know, razor beam antennas, as it were. And the 2-meter one is just one such example. I think it's on like 180 foot of tower. It's 16 Yagis, I think it's 16. This is pretty amazing.
Yes, I remember, there was a mountain above Portsmouth below them that I drove up sometimes called Mount Agamemnitus, a ski area that was good sometimes for tropo. But I remember when K1WHS and his brother K1WHT were first in Monroe, Connecticut. I have the QSLs from the 60s.
when I was on AM back then. But of course, they have an exceptional station. That's why you work them much. I didn't know the details of it. But the one time they QSL'd me is when I worked them during a September contest back in 2007. I was on Prospect Mountain near Lake George up there. And there they did answer my QSL. I guess that was a more unusual spot to have worked them from. W2TTTK2BARW2CH.
Comment?
Comment, go.
Hey, Gordon, WA2QBC. I just reached out to a friend of mine on Echolink that lives up in Vermont. And to quote him directly, it's windy as all get out up there. Everything's covered with a ton of ice. The antennas are protected with auxiliary radomes, because otherwise normal antennas will just break between the ice load and the wind. And obviously there's snow everywhere. And there is a web page with the observatory, and you can get weather. So you can probably look it up on the internet, but you can see me what's going on a daily basis, rain or shine.
Oh, there's a Mount Washington. Is there a Mount Washington camera, or is it just telemetry?
He didn't mention camera, but he did say weather observation.
Mint. Very, very nice. Very, very nice. Okay. Anybody else?
Quick comment?
Quick comment, go.
KD2FTA. Yeah, you could, there's webcams for the mountain that you could go on the internet and just type in Mount Washington webcams, and I think you can also sign up to be a subscriber so you can see the mountain from different locales and regions up there in the North Conway area. And you can also spend an evening up in the observatory, but I don't remember what the arrangements were. I think you needed to have like Arctic survival gear. That's another thing you just need to look up on the web if you're interested in doing that. But yes, you could spend time up in the mountain in the observatory during winter conditions.
Really, you can actually do that, but how do you get up there? They drive you up in the snowcat and you pay a lot of money for the privilege of staying overnight?
And there's a couple of ways of doing it. One is a climb, actually, and there's guides that'll get you up there. And the other thing, I do remember the snowcat, but again, it's been a while, so you should just check it out on the web if you're interested in spending the money and doing that. It's something that you could say you did.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go look around. It's pretty nifty. Absolutely nifty. Alrighty. Anybody else?
B2J, you kidding?
Don.
My friend John, KN1H, used to work for the Vermont Public Television organization up there. And in the wintertime, they would get out with a four-wheel drive pickup truck. As they can with that, to then get on a snowcat, and sometimes that wouldn't go all the way. They'd wind up on snowshoes. When they got to the building that the transmitter was in, they'd have to, the snow would be up to the roof on the one side. Of course, that's the side where the door was, so they had to shovel the thing out. So it's not a pleasant place to be up the hip of the mountains like that. Back in that W2JK.
Yeah, not only that, but you had the added joy and privilege of doing it in bitter temperatures with driving wind that can physically knock your ass over. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people have ever tried to stand up in 70, 80 degree sustained wind, but I can assure you it is not an easy task.
Things are chained down.
Yeah, I know. The buildings are chained down, which tells you something else. Guy wires in the building. Bob, have we answered your question?
Yes, you have, indirectly, kind of. I was
my main thing was, has anyone ever communicated directly with the mountain during the winter months from this area? I've gone up in a cable tram, an enclosed cable tram, when I went up maybe 20 years ago. And it was, I guess it was in the fall. And it was quite a nice thing to see this. But my question has anybody actually communicated with the place during the winter time and gotten, let's say, wind velocity and temperatures? That was my real answer. But the answer that I did get to questions is something was very informative. N2ZZK, back to the W2TTT.
Okay, well, thank you very much for bringing that topic up. That's always exciting. We heard a little about our friend Dave Olean, K1WHS, and the like, so that's always fun. By the way, I've been invited to be a part of that station for 20 years, and I'm turning it down. And I think, it's sort of like a bucket list thing, but I know it's going to happen. If I ever do it, I'm going to want to do it more than once. Maybe when Jeremy stops playing hockey in the spring, 1 year, which will probably be never, or there's not a conflict with VHF con this weekend. Maybe I'll go do that, or I'll do it all in September 1 year when I know he's not playing roller hockey. So that's pretty cool. I definitely want to do that. Steve Costro, N2CEI, he and his wife, Andy, own Downey's Microwave, which is no longer in Maine. When they bought it, it was in New Jersey, and they moved it to Florida because they'd rather live in Florida than any state of New Jersey. So it's all good. Alrighty, well, thank you, Bob, for that question. If nothing else, that was pretty neat. KD2FTA, Alex, you had a question. K2BAR.
Well, KD2FTA, and good evening to everybody on the net. It's a nice net this evening. Very informative, as always. 10 meters has been hopping lately, and the question was, I got a friend who's going to give me a 10-meter rig to borrow for a weekend or two. I want to put together a 10-meter dipole, so I am soliciting basically comments, advice, on. And here's the question, how best to put up a strictly 10-meter dipole, not multiband. I did see a couple of products out there. MFJ has got a 10-meter dipole for about $40, but I don't want to spend $40. I want to just put one together myself. So I'm looking for comments, advice, critique, opinions. So back over to you, Net Control Gordon. This is KD2FTA.
Oh boy, there's so many different ways to play that game. All right, so let me give you like three quick answers. One is cut yourself a 10-meter dipole, 468 over frequency in megahertz. We'll give it to you in feet and decimal feet. You know, so it's about 11 feet on each leg, and away you go. That's one way. You don't even have, if you have a piece of coax, you can literally solder the wire to the dipole elements and just, you know, brace it with something real quick, like a piece of plastic or whatever, just to hold everything mechanically together. And you can put about 10 turns of, you know, RG8X, about 6-inch diameter, as a ballon right under the feed point, and that's number one. Number two solution, if you want something vertical and easy, just build yourself a quarter wave ground plane. If you don't have the provisions for ground planes, just make it a quarter wave dipole, one vertical element and one horizontal element. And it'll be directional in the direction of the ground plane element. If you want to put more than one ground plane element, two or three or four, it'll become more circular as you get more elements in on the horizontal side. And you can drop them down about 45 degrees, and that'll bring the matching point up to about 50 ohms. You'll be good to go. The third option is to build yourself a J-pole. Just go look at Copper Cactus or J-pole and use their formulas to make a big honking piece of copper J-pole, or you can
even build it out of twin lead or 400 ohm or 450 ohm, I should say, ladder line or twin lead, and I just hang it from a tree or from some non-conductive thingy, and tack your soldering iron, tack a coax to it, feed point, and away you go. So those are three quick antennas for 10 meters. How's that?
Very good, very good. Yes, actually all those opinions were rendered to me by a YL I work with, first name Joyce, who you may know because she participates in the Fairlawn Club. And she also offered some other advice too. So that's great, Gordon. I appreciate that, and I'll run with that. Decisions, which one to pick. The other, you know, and just a quick other question. Does anybody have any idea why 10 meters has been hopping so much lately? I'm hearing, I think it was Willie P. the other day was telling me about his contacts down in New Zealand. And a whole bunch of folks in my ham club have been talking to folks up in Norway. Just the curiosity is overwhelming right now. KP2FTA, back over to net control.
Stay that way to about the new year. It's the season. That's basically it. Anybody else have any thoughts on antennas or want to explain why 10 meters is so good at this point? And by the way, we're not in the total doldrums of the sunspots or sunspot either, but anybody else want to make a comment?
Leave them into JEK.
Got two at least. JEK, Don, go.
Yeah, well, for some of the DX that you'll have, like New Zealand and Norway, is F-layer DX. But sometimes at night, in December and January, or during the day even, in those that time of the year, is what we call sporadic E-skip. It's only good out to about 1,200 miles, unless you get lucky to something that goes out double that. It's called double hop. I remember working the 10-meter contest in December, and it was working local stations, and they're just on the edge of my range, and I could just about copy them, and all of a sudden this guy comes in with a W-2 call, and I worked him, and it turned out he's in Florida, and I did a couple more like that with loud signals. They were all down in Florida. Went on to 6 meters, found 6 meters, so I worked a couple stations on 6 meters, and then I stayed here down there and went back to 10 meters. So, yeah, there's a lot of things can happen on that band. With the sporadic E, so don't think because the sunspot cycle was down in the mud, in the future that there will be openings during January December and January, and also May, June, and July. That's when the sporadic E happens. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And whatever you do for your antenna, remember to get it up as high as you can, within reason, of course. Good luck with it. Back to that.
Good advice. Thank you, Don. Who is the other station?
The UA2QBC.
Bruce, go ahead.
And a couple other options, the long wires, random length long wires with a tuner, inverted Vs straight up and down, or inverted Vs out on an angle. I once pitched one from the tip of the roof of my house out towards into the backyard. That was on 15, and that worked quite well. There's a number of other options, too. Plus center fed is another one.
Sure, but you need a tuner for that. You know, these little 10-watt, 10-meter-only radios are not going to do that.
You can cut an off-center fed or a dipole and even a long wire to resonate directly on the band you want.
Sure can, but why go to the trouble of an off-center fed if it's only a single-band antenna with your intent? So that'd be my suggestion. All righty. Anybody else? That was interesting. That was a good question. So, Alex, do we answer your question?
Yeah, roger that, Net Control. Bruce and Don, thank you for your comments and answers. It's appreciated. I thought about the center, the off-center fed dipole. I think I'm going to go with a dipole. And the comment about as high as you can, I could probably get up to about 30 feet. I don't believe I can go much higher. But nonetheless, 30 feet is better than 10 feet. So, anyway, gentlemen, thank you. And as always, very informative, Ned. And thank you for doing the Ned tonight, Gordon. KD2 FTA, we'll be clear on the Gordon's final here. It's getting a little late, and I have to get up early to go to work to the salt mine. KD2 FTA.
Already, that too. All right, very good. Anybody else?
Just one other quick comment, Gordon. With most of the dipoles and the off-center feds, you're generally looking at some kind of a 4-to-1 matching device. Be it a commercial ballon, a toroid, or something you can make. A bunch of us at the club have been making 4-to-1 ballons out of toroids, and both high and low power, and they're fairly easy to make on your own.
I was trying to keep the cost down to a dull roar, and, you know, certainly by not having to buy any more than coax and wire and maybe find some plastic for some insulators and some old rope or string to hang thing up, that's about it. Yeah, I was trying to make it so the item in the hole.
You could also put up a sloper if that works.
Absolutely. Actually, this Saturday I'm planning on a for Jamboree on the Air. I'm planning on on just that, an OCF dipole. If I have time to go run off and buy a 4-to-1 balance, based on the time to wind one, cut the wire and solder it up tomorrow night over at the club, and then slap some coax on it, and away we go. Won't be that hard, actually. I'll probably cut the wire tomorrow here at home. I'm debating between an 80-meter one and a 40-meter one, but I always wanted to have an 80-meter thing, and I could hang it off the side of the school for Jamboree on the Air and go from there. So we'll see.
Yeah, the off-center fed, you can do either a 3070 or a 6633, depending on what you're trying to do. And if you want something that's multi-band that will resonate on 15 as well, there's a wind that basically reuses 300 ohm feed line, coming up about 50 feet of it. And then put your ballon down on the bottom, and that will give you more coverage.
Yeah, I think I'm going to forego that, only because too many of the installations I have are not conducive to using open wire line. Just out of curiosity, what's the dimension of the open wire line if I do that?
300 ohm. Dimensions will vary based on the size of the conductor and the type of installation involved.
How long a lead is on a twin lead, my point?
Well, the design that I saw mentioned 50 feet for Windham. Actually, it was they call it a modified Carolina Windham, I think was the name.
Now, that might be a possibility. I do have the parts. I wouldn't have to go buy anything. It'd make construction interesting, but it's really hanging in. It would be a challenge, but it could be done. We'll see. I might be tempted to do that. Anyway, I will be at St. John's Church Rectory on the porch in the back, indoor porch, to come into the back parking lot of the church. Just follow the wire off the school across the parking lot to the fence and see where the coax is going, where the twin lead goes, and then the coax. You'll figure out where I am at that point. I'm going to be there from, well, I'll be there from 8 o'clock on, but I'm asking people to come at 9 or so. Scout's probably at 10. And
I'll do that till about 4, I figure. Because at that point, you can start tearing things down so I can get on to other tasks for Saturday. But that's the current plan.
You have a toroid to use?
No, I don't. I have a one-to-one ballon, though.
Yeah, you generally want 4-to-1 on the dipole, the variance of the dipole.
Well, not if I'm using the lateral one. I don't need it.
No, the feed point is still about 300 odd ohms.
Oh, Jim told me that I could get away with a 1-to-1 at the end of the ladder line.
Jim was using the 1-to-1, and it was working okay. He had a tuner on it, but he was getting better results with the 4-to-1 when we did portable day earlier this year.
Okay, so if I just go down to Advanced Specialties and go get a 4-to-1 balance, that'll be that.
I've got a core. The only problem is getting it to you.
Coming to Fairlawn tomorrow night?
Thinking about it, but no guarantees.
Yeah, I'd have to have time to wire it, do all that stuff, package it, yada, yada, yada. So I'd probably push it.
Now, unfortunately, Gordon, all my ballon projects are sitting in a box in various stages of assembly.
I feel your pain. I really do. All right. Well, we'll sort out this thing in due time. Worst case is I'll make a multi-band dipole with slightly longish elements. I'll just deal with that. If I really run out of time, I've got a 40-20 that's long, so I'm sure it probably resins like a 13.8 and probably 6.7. No, probably 6.9 megahertz. But I've got that on those elements. So let's do it faster than those. Hoist it up, it'll work. I've got that one already built, so. Theoretically, I could have that done, you know, without too much trouble tomorrow at 20 and 40. I'd like to have a 10-meter element on there as well. But that design, I was debating as to whether I wanted to get 80, 40, 30, 20, and 17, and then, you know, run the other bands. For 10 and 15, I can run, you know, basically use a tuner to solve that problem along with 12, and away you go.
Yeah, got it. Getting back to the original question, I've also seen people just use mobile antennas if they have them lying around for just a quick portable operation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A pair of dipoles, you know, bigger quarter waves from your car, they actually make a fitting for that. Actually, I have one or two of those kicking around. But I think what I want to do is, yeah, I got that. Thank you, Randy, for the call. It was ENV. I thought so. That was that AJ. All right. Bitty cool with that. I'll straighten that out on the roster. All right, well, we'll give that due consideration. I've got a couple of different options, but I've always wanted to have a big dipole that I can put up in certain select situations. I mean, I live on a 40-foot lot, so 80 meters is always a challenge. Getting anything high up in the air is even more of a challenge, so we'll see. All right, anybody have anything for the net tonight?
W2NHA, what's the question?
Mr. Matt, go right ahead.
Hey, Gordon, how you doing? As you know, I've been going dipole crazy up at my mom's house, especially the last few months, I'd say. So I've got a lot of them up, and they live in the country with many unbelievably tall trees in the yard. And I've come up with a way with a bow and arrow and a piece of hardened clay on the end with no arrow tip on it. that can shoot a fishing line over whatever limb I choose, and then I pull up the heavier line. So most of my dipoles are up in the 40 to 56 foot ranges. Lately, I've been experimenting with inverted Vs. And, you know, you can Google stuff, you can look through the antenna handbooks, but there's nothing like experience. And I'm wondering, how does one choose, or is there a recommended degree of angle for the inverted Vs? Anybody know what works best, or is there a theory behind it? And like I said, you know, it's easy to look all this stuff up. I've looked at different things in the past. But I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, or anybody else's thoughts are, on the angle of the inverted Vs. Back to you, Gordon.
Well, I mean, a lot of those diagrams are published online, but fundamentally, you know, if you bring it down to like 45 degrees or even, you know, less, in other words, not as acute, but 30 to 45 degrees will tend to round, 30 to 45 degrees will round out the pattern a little bit. I don't like 30 degrees for vertical myself, it's just too close. I think you get some interactions and it really kind of gets goofy unless you get something way up in the air, but still. 45 kind of rounds out the pattern, anywhere up to like 45 to 60, 65, even 70 degrees tends to round out the pattern a little bit so that you get a little more radiation off the ends of your dipole where normally you would have a null. In other words, if you have a normal flat dipole, let's say it's at the optimal height, which is another question, by the way. So you have it that quarter wave or more above the ground, and the ends are way up in the air. And what happens is there'll be two lobes on the broadside element, broadside of the dipoles, is the sideways side. But off the ends, there will be a bit of a null. By bringing down the elements into more of a V, it rounds out the pattern. Now that's assuming, again, that you're in free space and assuming you're at least a quarter wave or more above the ground with those ends. But, you know, having said that, most of us are not doing that. Most of us use inverted Vs in order to fit the damn thing on our locks. That's the real reason.
Okay, very good. That's where I got lucky. And my mother lets me put up whatever I want up there, you know. My dad always did the same. So I've got so much room for the 20, the 40, and the 80 out front. I did not know that you can take it that far, 70 degrees or so, about that rounding out the pattern. I read in one of my antenna ARL handbooks something about the degree margin, but I didn't know that you could go that far. That's pretty interesting. So there's something for me to play with and change a little bit. And something you spoke of is another reason why I have two 20-meter dipoles and two 40-meter dipoles running north and south, east and west, different sections of the property. And it's amazing how sometimes you think it should work according to the direction off the sides. But, you know, you flip the switch and you're on the yellow one and you watch the signal come up. So it's theory and all that stuff in radio is really amazing. I'm not sure, Gordon, about the minimum height for a dipole to take off. I always thought it was 30-something feet. I don't remember what the quarter wave thing is. But anyway, thank you for the answer. And that shows me I have some experimenting by increasing that V angle greatly. And that's nice. I love playing around like that. Thank you for your help. Back to net. This W2NHZ.
Okay, so I think we may be talking past each other. When I say 70 degrees, it's almost horizontal still, okay? It's not 70 degrees from horizontal, it's 70 degrees from vertical.
70 degrees from center point upwards, right?
No. So, assuming zero is a flat dipole, 70 degrees would be down 20 degrees on each side.
Okay, I was looking at it the opposite way. What I was meaning was centered below the feed point of the dipole, going upwards to 70 degrees up. But the way you're looking at it is a much more standard way. From the dipole itself, from horizontal, 20 degrees down, basically.
Right, you're taking the ends of the wire and pushing them 20 degrees down, okay?
Yep, gotcha, understood. Yeah, that's great. It gives some time to play with antennas after working up there most of the day, which I love to do. Thanks again.
Okay, just keep in mind, what you may want to consider is that if the two wires of the dipole become too close together, then they interact and things become they interact too much and it just doesn't work at all. You go at about a 45 degree angle going down. That's about where you kind of limit it. I generally try to limit it there. Some people try to make it even more, even 30 degrees, from vertical. Like, wow, that can be really bad. But it also can be really good if you can put them on the same side and maybe fan them out so they're 60 degrees or 80 degrees or 90 degrees apart. You can essentially get the gain as a sloper. That's another thing. So, you can model all that stuff. There's free modeling software out there for minimal elements of wire, so you don't have too many segments. In this case, a dipole with two wires has only two segments. You can model that above ground, height above ground, height above ground, speed point, height above ground, at the end point, and what angle they are to each other, and also with respect to ground. I mean, you can model all that stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, lots of different things you can do, and there's always ways to do it differently all the time. There's no one right idea, because so many different ideas work. Location is a big factor in everything. Like here at home, my sideband minimum band noise is never less than S6. And greater, of course. You know my location, so it's no wonder. But up there, I've got about S2, S3 band noise, and what a difference. Just so many things help in so many different ways on the receive end, too. Everybody's thinking about transmitting, but hearing, that's a whole other thing. But no other comments on that. So again, thanks. This is W2NHZ.
Okay, very good. Very, very good. That's a good thing. And, keep in mind, it all is a function of what kind of environment you have to put the antenna in, what frequency you're operating on, what kind of support you have, and where do you want the RF to go squirting off to. I mean, all those things matter. So, I mean, there are some antennas that you can have too high, too selective, too, if you go too pointy, if you go too narrow, whatever you want to call it. Other things, antenna signals can go and, illuminate a close proximity much better than can the distance. A vertical, especially on HF, low bands, is great for de-exing that low angle radiation. If you can pull it off, it's great. It's lousy to talk 100 miles. Yeah, or 500 miles, it just won't work. So you'd be better off with a cloud warmer, a dipole that's just, 12 feet off the ground. You'd be better off with that. All right, anybody else? All right, well, everybody, a couple of key pieces of information. This net we will send out on the Comtech group some notes about tonight, although I haven't been taking many, so I'm going to have to go and put some notes in after the fact. I may not get the attributions right, but I'll try to get the topics right at least this time. You can join the Comtech group by getting to the Yahoo group. It's Comtech group, all one word. Charlie Oscar Mike, Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, Golf Romeo Oscar Uniform Papa, Comtech group at Yahoo Groups. You can do that, or you can email me w2ttt@awrl.net, and I will add you to the group if you can't find the Yahoo group yourself. Lots of good files on there, lots of good resources to reference. And then, of course, the nets are replayed, or recorded, I should say, on amateurradio.tangovictor, www.amateurradio.tangovictor. You can use that to hear old nets, and that's kind of cool as well. And we look forward to bringing you again. If you have any questions or comments after the net, be happy to handle them. So anyway, y'all take care and God bless. And thank you for your participation tonight. Thanks to Justin Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. And hopefully you guys will support them as you do other repeaters, I'm sure, in the area. So, with no further ado, this is TTBAR W2TTT, returning the repeater to normal amateur radio use. Good night, gentlemen.
We need to record.
7-3, thank you.